fellow leaders for your timely and salient remarks. And above all, thank you, Volodymyr, for hosting today's summit and for your courageous leadership as the duly elected democratic leader of this great nation. You've shown remarkable personal bravery, resilience, and resolve, a defiant spirit mirrored by the unbreakable Ukrainian people. You continue to inspire me and tens of millions of my fellow citizens back home in Canada.
And it will be conservatives who will continue to stand with the Ukrainian people now against the illegal, unjustifiable, and ego-driven bloodshed initiated by Vladimir Putin. We will stand up every day and every way in favor of the export of 83,000 CRV-7 missiles that the Ukrainian government has asked for. We also call on the government to keep its promise that thus far has been broken to deliver air defense systems, $400 million of which were announced on January 10, 2023, Putin has said he wants our Arctic. We know that once he defeats one country that he invades, he will move on to the next. His appetite for expansionism is insatiable. We stand with you now and always. Slava Ukraini.
Under President Zelensky's leadership, we have the conditions, the possibility of a just last
election. I'm Frank Vaughn. It's January 20th, 2026, and the powers that be are gathered together in Davos, and they are deciding what the future of 2026 is going to look like. Now, in the title of the video, I talked about Greenland and Canada. And I alluded to last night that I had some ideas as to the extended scope of what Greenland really is all about. Now, at the surface level, I don't believe for a second that Trump is lying. He wants it, and he wants it for the reasons that he's stating he wants it. But it's also leverage. It's leverage against a Europe that is desperate to keep the war going that led to the things, the practices, the human rights violations, the mass slaughter of so many men that is the Ukraine war. People will gaslight you all day, including all of your political leaders here in Canada, about the nature of the conflict. The fact of the matter is, this was a creation of the West, and that is not Russian propaganda. After tirelessly negotiating for 8 long years post-coup, the Russians finally decided to go in, and their pretext is every bit as valid, and you can make the argument that all pretexts of this nature are invalid. For comparative purposes, the Russian pretext for going into Ukraine was as strong or stronger than the NATO pretext for killing Gaddafi, or for going into Bosnia-Herzegovina, or doing the machinations that they've done all around the world a hell of a long way from the Atlantic Ocean. So let's dispense with some of the talking points that many will counter when it comes to the Europeans and the strength of their hand. But I want to reveal today that the Europeans, in fact, have no hand at all, in spite of the talking points that you're going to hear. I encountered probably 36 times yesterday the same talking point over and over and over again, regurgitated by anonymous no-name accounts, that China does a lot of business with the United States, and therefore Canada doing business with China is a nothing burger because of the numbers of trade. Now, if we adjust for population and we adjust for GDP and we do all this stuff, we can dispel that talking point on its surface level merits, if it has any. But the subsurface level merits don't exist whatsoever. Canada has become a captured vassal state of Chinese interests. We barely stand on our own 2 feet. You can argue, and I've made that argument, that we don't stand on our feet at all. And the vast majority of Canadian citizens are completely ignorant. And I say that not as an insult. I say that not as a colloquial. Ignorance is a cause of being deliberately ignorant or ignoring the facts. Now, you're either ignoring them deliberately or you've never been exposed to them because you haven't crossed paths with them yet. But I try every single day. My objective is to cure ignorance. It's a curable disorder. Most Canadians do not want to have their ignorance cured intellectually, so they're going to have it cured by another means. But either way, we'll get into that. I want to talk about the first talking point vis-a-vis Europe, and that is that they hold $8 trillion in U.S. treasuries, and they will dump those treasuries, and they will destroy the United States by doing so. Now, let me break that down for you. Those $8 trillion treasuries, if they dump those treasuries, will result in higher treasury yields, elevated borrowing costs, and a weaker dollar. Potential inflation spikes from pricier imports, and pressure on deficit financing that could trigger a recession or force drastic fiscal tightening. Seems that that serves the objectives of the administration. They want a weaker dollar. Only a weaker dollar can deal with the rising national debt. There has to be a reorganization. There has to be some kind of, dare I say, reset. But the only way to reshore manufacturing is to make it cheaper and more attractive to do business in the United States while making it harder for foreign entities to do business in the United States through tariffs. This is their plan. Whether you agree with it or not, this is their plan. So that's the U.S. side. They will achieve some level of pain, but it will long-term serve their objectives. Now, the EU, on the other hand, would suffer massive capital losses because they'd have to sell at depressed prices. If they dumped all $8 trillion of those treasuries, they would lose money. The euro would surge in strength, which would destroy their export competitiveness, and it would tip many member states into recession, disrupt global funding markets, which would hurt European banks, and self-inflicted financial pain from the deep interdependence of transatlantic markets. So this idea that they will just dump all of their treasuries and that will be the magical kill shot that takes down the United States, it's a gun pointed at themselves. They will destroy their own economies. Now let me talk about another way that they will destroy themselves. In this world, timing is everything. And in order to have proper timing, you have to pay attention to the things that are going on around you that are outside of your control. Look, on this channel, we talk about what is. We don't talk about what we want. We talk about what is and how we can navigate it, because like it or not, you and me, we're not in control. We are little rowboats, if we're lucky, in the raging river. And I want to get through the rapids, and we are coming into a period of historic rapidity. The article on screen is Closing the Tap. EU agrees on deal to end Russian gas imports by 2027. Did you know that Europe, while they're fighting a war against Russia and they're trying to create World War III, still in 2025 got 20% of their natural gas needs from Russia, something like 7.6 billion euros, might be US dollars. It's a lot of money they sent to the Russians so the Russians could arm themselves to continue fighting the war in Ukraine. Seems at odds with their stated objective. So after a long period of finagling, because Trump came into office and he said, "Thou art hypocrites. You know, you want to talk about what I do, and I'm talking to the Russians. You are buying their stuff. You need to stop. If you want us to fight World War III, you should probably stop providing capital to our enemy." Something like that. I'm paraphrasing. So finally, December 2nd, might have been December 1st, it was the beginning of December, the Europeans agreed they'll phase it out by 27. So they're still going to be buying through all of 26, including finishing up this winter and the start of next year's winter problems for them. But here's another thing. Sorry, this is actually the same thing. EU spent $7.2 billion on Russian LNG in 2025, maximizing imports before the 2027 ban. So that's a couple different sources. But this one, the United States remained the world's largest liquefied natural gas exporter in 2024. Did you know that some 40-odd percent of European needs are being met by the United States at this time when it comes to liquid natural gas? I've made allusions to Europe not being able to sustain itself without energy from elsewhere. This was a problem that faced Germany prior to the Second World War. They knew they needed Russian grain and they needed Russian oil. And one of the reasons they invaded in 42, the Russians that is, was so that they could capture Ukraine and they could capture the Caspian oil fields to further fuel their war machine. Prior to the Second World War, they had massive trade arrangements with the Soviet Union and the Russians, whereby German arms and materiel and manufacturing equipment and machinery would go to the Russians and raw materials would come back from Russia. And that was how they built their army. That was how they got themselves through energetically the first period of the Second World War. The problem for Europe has only expanded since the Second World War because the population has expanded and they haven't exactly found resources. They're still dependent on the outside world. So we talked about the treasuries. Let's talk about liquid natural gas. Let's talk about the headline on screen. Europe weighs using trade bazooka against the U.S. as Greenland crisis deepens. Love that headline from CNBC. European countries are reportedly considering retaliatory tariffs and wider economic countermeasures against the United States. What are they going to do? If the United States, if they respond with retaliatory tariffs, the United States can just cut off the liquid natural gas shipments to Europe. It's very simple. And what kind of pain would this visit on the U.S. economy? Well, certain producers, of course, would feel the pinch, but it's a rounding error for a federal government that's still printing a lot of money. Now, even though, and I want to say this, even though the debt is growing, government spending is actually down, even though it's still deficit, don't get me wrong, but the GDP in the United States is growing at something like 5 or 6%, and it's not coming from government spending. It's coming from investment in the United States. The exact opposite, antipole, to Canada, where capital is fleeing, capital is moving into the United States. So when Bessent or Trump says that America is the hottest thing in the world right now, it's because so much capital is flowing in as people get positioned for, dare I say, Carney's New World Order, because there is a New World Order. It's not the Davos one that you're used to. It's not the City of London. It's going to be a multipolar world order, and it's all still getting fleshed out, and we try to talk about the fleshing on this channel. The only point I'm trying to make is that Europe doesn't have any cards to play. They are saber-rattling, except they're not actually rattling a saber. They're rattling an empty sheath. They are powerless. They went from begging and kissing Trump's backside when it comes to helping them keep the Ukraine war going at all costs, saying they just didn't have the resources, to threatening to go to war over Ukraine, or sorry, Greenland. It's not going to happen, folks, because every single thing they can do hurts them worse. And listen, Europe has been trying to contain populist movements in almost every single nation in the European Union. The AfD in Germany has been rising in the polls for years, and they have faced oppression. They have faced election banning. They have faced all kinds of Machiavellian machinations coming from Brussels. The same thing has happened in France when it comes to Le Pen and the National Rally. Now she, Marine Le Pen, is now banned from running for president. Doesn't mean someone else from the party isn't going to run. And as the economic situation really hits home for Europeans, that populist wave is just going to keep rising. Outright assassinations and assassination attempts, Georgia, Romania, FICO, the threats that they've unleashed against Hungary because Hungary is a much more realistic nation, the backtalk against Italy. There's a lot of fractures forming in Europe along populist lines, but also along political and national lines, because things are not rosy for the Europeans. So they can ill afford. What are they going to do? Are they going to nuke the United States? Because that's really the option that France and Britain have. And Britain doesn't even have it. Because who controls British nukes? The Americans. So the French can use nuclear weapons, I suppose, to defend Greenland. That doesn't really solve their problem, does it? On screen is a post that Trump made this morning. He's trolling, for sure. But he's also quite serious. It shows all of the European leaders in the Oval Office gathered around his desk, looking like a bunch of children getting schooled by daddy. But they've made one alteration, and that is to the map. The map that Donald Trump shares shows Canada and Greenland as part of the United States. Now, at the surface level, he's serious. I genuinely believe his desire to create Fortress North America is a real one. However, on the flip side of this, opening the Greenland front on Europe applies pressure to them to end the Ukraine war and stop the reckless pursuit of World War III. I believe the Americans and the Russians, after they met in Alaska, are coordinating significantly to avoid escalation. They're trying to save all of our lives from the world war that the Europeans want. The message is very clear. The City of London, the European banking cartel, the World Economic Forum, can no longer be trusted. And by the way, they're all at Davos. Once again, Xi is not there. Now, he sent his vice premier and a delegation, but he is not there. Sends a message, doesn't it? Sends a message to me. The Russians and the Americans and the Chinese are creating a new world order. And it doesn't include the old world order, which was the really scary one. It's going to have its own problems, but it's not going to be the threat that we've faced, the threat that opened our economies up, destroyed our manufacturing base, outsourced it to India and China, created the conditions for the rise of these rivals, and destroyed our resilience at the same time, especially in Canada, but not just Canada. It happened in the United States as well. Peter Ratcliffe says, Canada knows exactly who China is. We can deal in trade with our eyes wide open and protect ourselves wisely. Canada has many things China needs. We no longer know who the U.S. is. We can no longer deal in trade with confidence and stability. We must reduce our U.S. independence. Posts like this are based in monumental ignorance. They don't understand basic statistics. Now, either Peter is playing at being stupid, or he's just ignorant. He doesn't know either. It plays on something Canada has in abundance, which is a population that is emotional, that likes to react, that doesn't spend any time knowing things, but wants to signal that they know things. Let me show you some realities, Peter, about our eyes wide open and how we protect ourselves by letting in Huawei, by letting in their EVs, by letting them operate police stations on our soil, by letting their cartels run our ports, by letting them interfere in our elections. These things are beyond proven. They're part of the public record, Peter. That's how we protect ourselves wisely, according to you. Now, Canada has many things that China needs. Well, Peter, this graph is pretty devastating to your thesis. As you can see, the United States takes 3/4 of our exports. China takes a mere and meager 3-4%. For all the finagling and supplication that Mark Carney just did in China, it only increased market access by about $7 billion. It only got us back to levels that we previously seen. The truth is, China doesn't need anything that we have except for our raw materials, and they want them as cheaply as possible. And the price that we pay is a sacrifice of our sovereignty. They operate with abandon in our country, engaged in criminality that the government is more than happy to cover up. They target our citizens. They threaten to kidnap political opponents. Literally, in the last election, a liberal candidate said that his opponent should be kidnapped and handed over to the Chinese embassy for a reward. And nothing happened. Of course, the candidate was removed, but they didn't go to jail. They didn't get charged for that. And of course they didn't, because China has an outrageous amount of influence over Canada. And you know what else China has that maybe Canada needs? I mean, we're supposed to be in the modern era and against this sort of stuff, but modern slavery in China, estimated number of people living in slavery. 5.7 million. Maybe we can import some of them. You know, we're already importing a slave class through the TFW and the IMP program. You know, it's not just Canadians that are getting hurt by mass immigration. It's also many of those immigrants themselves who just, they come here, they respond to ads, they find out they're indentured serfs when they get here. They work long hours for little pay if they get paid at all. They're shoved in hotels. They're shoved in houses. 10, 20 people living in the same house if they're lucky to live in a house. There's a lot of hotels that are just full of TFWs. And if they speak about their conditions, if they protest, they'll get sent home. They'll get deported. And oftentimes, the people who are managing them are so-called new Canadians or companies that are owned by foreign investors. We have created a slave class in Canada. Maybe that's why we love China as well, because they do the same thing. Mark Carney said, Muslim values are Canadian values. 2 million of that 5.7 million number are Uyghur Muslims that are enslaved in the northwest of China. Have we just forgotten all of this? Have we just forgotten that Mark Carney said they were our principal strategic rival? Have we forgotten reality? Have we divorced ourselves so completely from the fact that the United States is right beside us and shares cultural and institutional history with us? That they're much closer to us than we are to anybody else in the world? They are irreplaceable. Do you know something? Mark Carney knows that. Do you know what else Mark knows? That when he threatens to invoke Article 5 with a complete misunderstanding on public display, I think he knows what he's doing. About what Article 5 actually says and what it actually requires of NATO members, which, by the way, if NATO survives Davos this weekend, it's going to be because the Europeans make enormous concessions. The United States is NATO. Let's make no mistake. But when Canada says it would honor its Article 5 obligations, and he alludes to the fact that we would go to war with the United States if they did anything about Greenland. On screen, for those who are listening, is a graphic which tells the tale of the capacity of the Canadian armed forces, and it actually does a terrible job of that. It compares the armed forces. I mean, we don't need to belabor this point, but I just want to say that even with the disparity that's displayed on screen, you have to take into account our readiness, which halves these numbers. We can't actually field this weaponry and materiel because we have a personnel shortage, and we also have zero depth. We have no ammunition reserves to fight for even a few weeks. What little we had, we sent to the Ukrainians. So Canada has been deliberately disarmed. And I want you to think about why. The most brilliant strategies when it comes to geopolitics, politics, or even just your life. If you're trying to pull the wool over someone's eyes, if you have to conspire to achieve an objective, the absolute best strategy involves taking actions that can be interpreted two different ways. An overt way, a way that is very visually apparent, that is very direct, and then the covert way, which is your hidden motive. And the interesting thing about Carney being parachuted into Canada is that if you were looking to weaken Canada's position as a sovereign nation, you would take the exact actions that he is taking right now. And once again, I want to remind you, his wealth, his stocks, they're all parked in U.S. companies. His allegiances are to companies that are rooted in the United States. His children went to American schools. And sure, he lived in Europe for a while he was central bank manager of the Bank of England. But where did he go to work for after that stint? And who did he work for before? Morgan Stanley before, Brookfield afterwards. And as I've spelled out on this channel, Brookfield makes money through North American integration. So as he parades around, talking about elbows up, going to China, talking about a new world order, which can be interpreted two different ways. Probably more than that, but it can be, I think we only need to interpret it in two different ways. And you might on the surface say he's surrendering us to China. But at the subsurface level, He's actually painting a great big target on our back and making sure we are very weak when the United States gets around to dealing with us. And that is what I think people are missing. There's so many that are just operating at the surface level and fail to understand. I mean, there are so many forms of ignorance and distraction that I could probably write a book about the sophistication of the PSYOP that Canadian people, everybody, and this is a thing, I made a tweet last night talking about Jesus, actually, and how he said, forgive them when he was being nailed to the cross, forgive them for they know not what they do. And it makes it very hard for me to hate the people who hate me so visually. I mean, the level of invective and insults that I've had to deal with over the last two or three days, and they roll off me. The thing that bothers me is what it says about the human condition. Even if three quarters of it is bots, people are inspired by the bots to behave like the bots. They curse, and swear, and demean. They insult, they go right to invective, they're personal. And the longer I do this, the further down this road I get, the less angry it makes me and the sadder it makes me for the human condition. A lot of people just have no clue. They don't even know what they don't know, and they have no desire to find out. And I don't think they're all malicious. I think some genuinely believe that supporting Carney is saving the nation. I mean, he says it. CBC and CTV and Global News tell them all day that Carney's out there going to bat for Canada. They can't seem to understand that he's been parachuted in here to do something. And whether that's to hand us to Europe, which is a dying order, and China, which is an there's no win for Canada. Also, there was the Qatar thing, and we should actually probably have a look very quickly at a very telling picture. There's Qatar. Could he bow any deeper? That's sovereign money, too. When you take sovereign money, and you can say that the CCP money is sovereign money as well, you lose a lot. You leave a lot on the table. You understand Canada is not, we don't have public land. We have crown land, and what that means. I don't want to digress too far. On the surface, it appears that Carney is here to hand us to the old order. But in fact, we are being positioned to be so structurally weak against the threat of the United States that we can't stand for 5 minutes. And it's guys like Carney and Doug Ford. And this is bipartisan, by the way. I see this post that keeps coming up. Don't you know that Stephen Harper signed the FIPA? These people have no idea of my work. They have no idea that I've talked about this in the past, that I've highlighted not just Harper, but Bernier's role in selling us out to China. Bernier is supposed to be our savior to this cult that follows him, and they don't even understand the history of what the man supported. Stephen Harper gave us the Foreign Investment Protection Act, which gave China a lot of say over Canada. This is a bipartisan issue. We have been gutted and denuded for the old world order. The issue is that order has come and gone. And there are some people on the global stage, and indeed in the public, who haven't got the memo. But it's happening, whether you like it or not. And in the face of this new multipolar order that is being created, Canada's defenseless. And we are doing nothing in spite of the press, in spite of Carney, and in spite of the bots on Twitter that are telling you that we are preparing to become resilient. Their actions are leaving us weaker, not stronger. And you can make a case that Carney is here to prepare the transition of North America to domination by the United States. Now, where does it come in for you? If you give me a choice, am I going to be dominated by China? Do I want to live under the World Economic Forum? Or do I want, potentially, if we don't squander the opportunity, do I want the protection of the Constitution? Do I want to participate in the largest economy in the world? Do I want a borderless North America? If I'm forced into a choice, folks, it's not even hard. It's not even a close contest. And when you realize that Canada has been gutted to the point where It's not just that it's been gutted economically. It's not just that it's been gutted politically. It's been gutted of fundamental rights and freedoms. We have a charter that doesn't even include property rights. We have a charter that says all of your God-given human rights are actually not God-given. They are subject to reasonable limitation by the government, whoever sits in parliament, whoever is appointed. I even say it wrong. It is not parliament that governs. It's the cabinet that they appoint. It's the prime minister and the governor general. You are subject to the reasonable limitation on your God-given human rights that the government, the cabinet, the PM, the governor general decides what rights need to be limited. And we now have, after the Emergencies Act was invoked to break up the Freedom Convoy, we now have legal decisions over and over again that say the government was wrong to suspend your charter rights. The most fundamental law in the country is supposed to be the charter. They suspended it. They were wrong to have done so. And there's still people being persecuted as a result of that invocation. And no one's gone to jail. And you know what Justin Trudeau's up to these days? Romping around in Davos, banging Katy Perry, and getting chased around just like old times by Ezra Levant.
What do you make of the Federal Court of Appeal upholding the ruling that your martial law was illegal? They said you violated...
It's good to see you, Ezra.
Thank you, Ezra Levant and Rebel News, for giving me one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Justin Trudeau clip of all time. And mark my words, if somehow all of this is wrong, if Trump loses the midterms, in spite of the fact that Tulsi Gabbard is doing a lot and the administration is doing a lot to get back to paper balloting and hand counting, you got to get the computers out of elections. That was part of what Venezuela was about as well. That's a story for another day. Somehow the Republicans lose the midterms, or the Republican Party, even if they win, is not supportive of Trump's goals. It could lead to failure. There's no guarantees that his objectives will be met at this time. He's just going for it. And once again, I want to repeat that Justin Trudeau and his superficial charm will be resurrected in the future. The Canadian people, who are ignorant by choice or ignorant by chance, doesn't matter what, with very short memories and very limited scope for deep intellectual inquiry and an enormous amount of scope for emotive signaling, that superficial charm will work again. They will forget everything he did, and he will come back just like his father. At any rate, I'm Frank Vaughn. If you value the work, please consider supporting it via the website so I can continue doing it. Ad-free, sponsor-free, merchandise-free, all the free. You get everything 100% upfront delivered to you. I'm basically the PBS of YouTube. I'll see you in the next one.